right? We got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. We don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Crank it, Glenn Gross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, what's going on? You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN. My name is Dan Courtwright. We got a short show for you today as we will be joining Joe Becker and Sean Kellerman with their coverage of Lawrence High softball facing off against Perry Lecompton. It will be a doubleheader. We'll kick it over to them at about 3:50. And also stay tuned. We have Hawk Talk with Coach Fitzgerald at 7 o'clock and Hawk Talk with Brandon Schneider at 8 o'clock. But we still have a lot of stuff to get to you. And we also have Sean Kellerman live from Lawrence High School. Sean, what's going on?
What's up, Dan? Good to chat with you following an exciting weekend, of course, with the NFL draft. And I know we're going to get into some of our Jayhawks who got drafted and or signed in the three-day event. And, of course, recap the Chiefs a little bit as well. A couple KU basketball notes, and then we'll get a chance to talk to David Leskey, too. So excited for all that. No, it's an abbreviated show as Joel and I are here over at LHS for softball doubleheader coverage, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, we are going to get to some draft talk, including some KU stuff, some Chiefs stuff, and we will have David Leskey from Inside the Crown coming up at around 3:30. As always, Rock Chalk Sports Talk is brought to you by 23rd Street Brewery. Sean, let's go ahead and get into it. Two Jayhawks were drafted. Dominic Pooney was drafted to the 49ers, 86th overall. He becomes the highest drafted Jayhawk since Aqib Talib in 2008 when Aqib went number 20 overall. Exciting stuff for Dominic Pooney, obviously. What an outstanding story from him. Came from Division II Central Missouri, played in the MIAA, transferred to KU and was a second-day draft pick. Also, Austin Booker was drafted to the Bears at 144 overall, I believe. So, good day for the Jayhawks. It's going to be really exciting to see kind of where they fit in. I think Dominic Pooney is going to fit in very well with the 49ers. They have a very fun offense, and it's going to be awesome for him because he's not only is he just a outstanding offensive lineman, but he's also an athletic offensive lineman, and you kind of need to be that. You kind of need to be a sort of a quick guy to be able to run in that system that Kyle Shanahan has.
Yeah, and a lot of people think that this was a steal for the 49ers, and obviously we're going to be a little bit biased, but we think the same. Pooney, a guy who could have been drafted as early as middle of the second round, ends up going 86th in round three. And it's always kind of nice when you end up going to a good team, and San Francisco certainly is that. They've had multiple Super Bowl appearances. Of course, neither have gone well in the past 5 years for the Niners. But, yeah, that's a great fit, you would think, for Pooney. He's got a young quarterback. There's a lot of skill position players in the Bay Area, and it's going to be fun. The guy who came to Kansas from Central Missouri and really became a star player in a first-team All-Big 12 Conference performer. Of course, left tackle protecting the KU quarterback. So you love that for Dom, and certainly well-deserving of at least where he went in the draft. Hopefully he's able to put together a very good career, and Niners got a good one, Dan.
Yeah, that's definitely right. And you know, he played left tackle here at Kansas. I would imagine he's probably going to be moving to sort of an interior lineman with San Francisco, just because of his size. I mean, he's about 6'3". I think in order to be left tackle in the NFL, you got to be like 6'5" and above. But I mean,
yeah,
that goes
just
without
ridiculous size,
yeah,
usually.
Oh, absolutely. But that goes without saying. I mean, I said it before, he's a very athletic guy. He's a one of the more athletic offensive linemen that I have ever seen. So I think that's going to be a great fit because there's going to be a lot of pulling stuff, a lot of you know, like wide receiver screens, that kind of thing. Shanahan, I'll give credit where credit's due. That offense is very fun to watch, and there's so many different added wrinkles whenever you're playing in that offense. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun for Dominic Pooney. Also, another Jayhawk came off the board in the fifth round, Austin Booker. Another amazing story. Came from Minnesota, did not play hardly at all at Minnesota, and got into Kansas. We developed him a little bit more, and then he turns out to be a fifth-round draft pick. So I think that's going to be an awesome, awesome recruiting move. I know Nick has talked about it in the past, but that's such an awesome – that's going to be an awesome recruiting move for Kansas to be like, hey, look at this. We took a D2 offensive tackle and made him into a second-day draft pick, and then we took a guy who was not playing at all at sort of a mid-level Big Ten school, and we made him into a fifth-round draft pick. So that's going to be awesome. And then Austin Booker, obviously, joining a very good, presumably a very good Bears team. They went 7-10 last year, but ended up with the first overall pick because of the Carolina Panthers trade, and they got Caleb Williams, and they got Roma Dunze, and their offense is going to be stacked, and Austin Booker has a really good shot of becoming a role player on that Bears defense. I'm very excited for him.
Yeah, I think if you listen to a lot of our offseason coverage on RCST regarding Kansas football, so much of our talk regarding the upcoming season is how's Kansas going to replace Austin Booker?
Right.
Now, not saying that that Dominic Pooney and a lot of the other graduating seniors or guys who have moved on from the program won't need to be replaced with good players, or you know, whether that's individual or a group of guys filling that slot. Booker seems to be the one guy, and maybe it's just because of the outlook of the upcoming season with the roster as is, he seems to be the one guy that we're most concerned with in terms of losing his production, because you have to have an edge rusher at any level of football right now, and Booker was just incredible. He was the newcomer of the year defensively in the Big 12 Conference, of course, transferred from Minnesota, where he did not play much. And again, yeah, we're Kansas fans. We bleed crimson and blue. But this is a steal for the Bears,
oh,
Dan.
Yeah.
I mean, 144 overall for Austin Booker in the fifth round. And if you watched any of him, you understand why he's a guy who potentially is going to have a great NFL career. And I know that's saying a lot for a guy who gets taken in the mid to late rounds. But we talked about Dorrance Armstrong back in the 2017 season, how he had such a dominant 2016, which was his sophomore season, that in 2017, defenses around the Big 12 started throwing more guys at him, and his production really went down. I want to say Dorrance had 10 sacks his sophomore year, and his junior year just two. Now, granted, it's not all about the stats, because other guys can pick up some numbers, and Booker played on a much better team overall for Kansas.
Right.
But that was still happening to Austin Booker when Booker had the early season success. He was getting guys thrown at him, and what happened? Nothing. His production remained the same, and he became just an absolute necessary force for the Kansas defense. So you look at the Bears in general. I mean, we talked a little bit off air. You know, defensively, we're excited for Booker, but good for the Bears for putting together a really good draft class. You get Caleb Williams. Is he a little bit of a head case? Yes, but you expect him to still have a good NFL career. Roma Dunze, you mentioned, he was the third wide receiver taken, but he may end up being a Pro Bowl-type performer and having a really, really good career as well. And then, of course, you know, they got Torrey Taylor, the punter from Iowa. Did Iowa have anybody on their team that wasn't a punter?
I don't remember last year. He had to have been their player of the year, at least. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
You saw that guy out on the field as much as you saw Cade McNamara out on the field. It was alarming.
It was insane. Yeah, it really was. So that was kind of funny. But, yeah, I mean, you look overall, the Bears have to be excited. Not to mention the guys that they brought in or return. I mean, you bring back DJ Moore, and then you also acquire Keenan Allen. I mean, you had those two with Roma Dunze, and then all of a sudden your offense is looking like something that fantasy football players around the world are going to be diving into, because there's going to be a lot of playmakers, big play capability. But a little bit of a tangent there. Credit the Bears for having a very good draft. Of course, we're going to like it when guys take our Jayhawks, and Ryan Poles and company did that for Chicago. And a quick note, by the way, I know you want to touch a little bit more on Booker, Dan, but did you see the stadium renderings for the new Soldier Field in Chicago?
I did. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it looks
crazy.
It looks insane. It's like right on the river. It, Yeah, no, good for the city of Chicago, because it's coming at the perfect time, right? Because the Chicago Bears have just been atrocious forever. They haven't done anything since 1985. Obviously, you know, they made the Super Bowl in 2003, whatever. But that's good for them, and it's all sort of lining up. The stars are aligning for the Chicago Bears. They got their franchise guy. They got a generational talent in Caleb Williams. They got Roma Dunze, who could be a generational talent. I mean, if you saw what he did at Washington, oh my goodness, he's outstanding. And then with Austin Booker added, and Keenan Allen added, I think it's going to be correct. They're set up for pretty good success in the coming future, that's for sure. So if you're a Chicago Bears fan, you should be ecstatic about that. So yeah, Austin Booker goes to the Bears in the fifth round. Like you said, Sean, absolute steal. I saw a ton of mock drafts. Almost every single mock draft that I saw, he was projected in the third round, and he fell to the fifth. I don't know how that happened, but just, you know, that's how the NFL draft is sometimes. And Sean, do you know what time it is in Indianapolis? It's Bean time.
Bean time.
That's right. Jason Bean signs an undrafted free agency to the Colts, whose general manager, I don't know if you knew this.
They've got a little bit of a connection, don't they?
They do have a little bit of a connection, and I think the general manager of the Colts knows a thing or two about Jason Bean, because the general manager of the Colts is Chris Ballard. Now, if you think that if you think that last name sounds familiar to you, that's because his son is Cole Ballard. That's right, Cole Ballard, the guy who played, he was Jason Bean's backup on the Kansas football team. So, yeah, that's very exciting for Jason Bean, and obviously Chris Ballard has seen a ton of tape, I would imagine, on Jason Bean just watching his kid play. So, yeah, that's very exciting for Jason Bean. I'm excited to see what they do with him because he's a very good quarterback. He's a very good quarterback. I don't want to get that wrong. But I've seen it kind of floated around of like, oh, he's going to be sort of like a Terrell Pryor, where they're going to transition him to wide receiver because he is so freaky fast. And even KU tried to do that 2 years ago when they went to the Liberty Bowl. He was lined up at wide receiver, and they wanted to do that this year, obviously, before Jalen Daniels got hurt. So, he's able to do it. I think they're going to make room for Jason Bean wherever he ends up, position-wise.
Yeah, for sure. And Jason Bean has one thing that pretty much no one else has, and that's Jason Bean's speed.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk about north to south, no one is faster, and that was actually proven statistically last year across college football. A lot of guys, none of them were faster from one point to another north to south than Jason Bean. I love the fact that it was the Colts who signed him or giving him that opportunity because, again, you mentioned Chris Ballard being the GM. He watched a lot of Kansas football, and they didn't only sign Jason Bean, did the Colts. It was Craig Young got signed as well, yep. So more talent being scouted by Chris Ballard. And Quentin Lassiter was also invited to rookie minicamp from the Colts. And we've got a few others, guys who have moved past their Kansas career who did not get drafted but did get invited. And I know you'll touch on a few of them. A couple other guys got signed. Kenny Logan got signed by the L.A. Rams. And then Mike Nowitzki to the Seattle Seahawks. But a plethora of other guys were invited to minicamp. Just really good to see because we've had so many dry years watching Kansas football. And, hey, it's not a shock, Dan. You have more talent. You win more games. You probably have a better individual players and a better chance for having success at the next level. Hopefully these guys can make the most of their opportunities.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And it is exciting to see because you can see the success that Kansas is having just based on how many guys. I mean, would this have happened, you know, in the David Beatty and the Les Miles era? I mean, you barely saw anything. You maybe saw one guy get drafted like a Dorrance Armstrong. And then you'd see like one, maybe two guys get undrafted free agent signings. I know we had like Kyron Johnson a couple years ago, but so it is very exciting to see the direction that Kansas is going. And yeah, like you said, Mike Nowitzki to the Seahawks, Craig Young also to the Colts, Kenny Logan signed to the Rams, and then a few guys getting minicamp invites. Mason Fairchild was invited to the Buffalo Bills minicamp, and Rich Miller was invited to the Bears and Ravens minicamp, and even Sauce Gardner had a tweet about that. Sauce Gardner tweeted about Rich Miller saying, somebody give this kid a chance. So yeah, that was kind of cool to see a star power like that shouting out one of our Jayhawks, and apparently it worked because Rich Miller obviously got invited to the Bears and Ravens minicamp. So that's going to be cool. And then Quentin Lassner also to the Colts minicamp. Kalen Gervin got invited to Green Bay and the New York Giants minicamp, and Devin Phillips invited the Chiefs and Buffalo. But Chiefs, that's awesome. Yeah, good for Devin Phillips. So yeah, a lot of really great KU star power coming out of Kansas this year. It's going to be exciting to see kind of how these guys do in the league. I think a lot of them have a lot of potential and could manage to have pretty lengthy NFL careers. We'll do more draft talk, more so on the Kansas City Chiefs side, coming up after this short break. And stay tuned, because Sean Kellerman and Joel Becker will have softball, Lawrence High softball, coming up. It is a doubleheader. Lawrence High is playing Perry LeCompton. First pitch is at 4 o'clock. We will join them at 3:50. Also, stay tuned. We have David Leske coming on the back end of the 3 o'clock hour. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, it's Nick Springer from Rock Chalk Sports Talk on KLWN, and despite sitting in a studio all day, my body feels great thanks to Massage Envy. Their total body stretch services can help you stay loose and limber and clear your mind and help your body. Their total body stretch services are completely customizable. All you have to do is sit back, relax, and breathe deep while they help you through the guided stretches. So if you've been dealing with aches and pains, be sure to check out Massage Envy on 6th Street in Lawrence and 119th and Black Bob in Olathe.
Welcome back into Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320. KLWN. My name is Daniel Courtright, not alongside Sean Kellerman, because Sean Kellerman is actually at Lawrence High School with Joel Becker. We will be joining them at 3:50 with their coverage of Lawrence High softball facing off against Perry LeCompton in a doubleheader. Also, stay tuned at 7 o'clock. We will have Hawk Talk with Coach Fitzgerald of the Kansas baseball team at 7 o'clock. That is also at 23rd Street Brewery. And Hawk Talk with Coach Brandon Schneider of the Kansas women's basketball team at 8 o'clock. And coming up now, let's touch on it a little bit. Actually, Sean, you had mentioned to me off air some interesting college basketball news. And what were your thoughts on some of the news that came out? I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, Dan, because on Friday we spent a large portion of the show talking about Ryland Griffin committing to KU, which was extremely notable because, as we've talked about and we'll continue to talk about, we're just salivating over the roster for the 24-25 Kansas basketball season. But we knew that something along these lines would probably happen, given the fact that KU had so many talented newcomers coming in. And one of the departures was LeBaron Phylon. He's a four-star point guard, kind of a point combo guard, similar size and probably similar game to what Frank Mason brought KU, at least when Frank Mason was a freshman. We're not going to say that Phylon has the same ceiling that Mason did as a National Player of the Year, but similar build, similar game. Phylon committed to Alabama over the weekend just shortly after requesting release from his NLI at KU, and it's just kind of ironic, isn't it? Because the Hawks get Griffin from Bama, and then essentially a trade-off there,
yeah,
with Phylon going to the Tide. And what's hilarious, Dan, and this reminds me of something you said on the show last week when we were talking about, you know, coaching in college basketball nowadays in the transfer portal. Like, yeah, you want to get talented freshmen in, but if you have the opportunity to go get somebody who's proven it, particularly at a high major level, then I'm sorry, that guy is going to take precedence. And this just seems like a situation where KU is going to end up better for it. Certainly next year's team is going to be better for it because you're going to have an impact guy right away. But it's just kind of ironic that Phylon, of all the places, ended up going to the Tide. And I think he initially was going to go to Auburn but never officially signed, then went to KU. And then that's just kind of how it goes for college basketball players and prep players out of high school, is they don't really know what they want. But in this case, for now, LeBaron Phylon to the Tide. KU, of course, with Griffin coming in.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. Yeah, it's almost like we did a swap with Alabama, although who knows how much of an impact LeBaron Fylon will have at Alabama. I like LeBaron Fylon. I like his game. I think he's a very solid player, and I don't exactly know what the depth situation is like at Alabama. I don't know if he'll have a chance to play right away. I'm not that in tune with Alabama basketball, but yeah, I mean, so I don't know. I'm happy with Rylan Griffin coming to KU, though, just because, you know, more experienced player. He's older, you know, like I said, has that experience playing in big games, and we know that he can be huge down the stretch. I mean, he played on a Final Four team this year. So, yeah, that is exciting stuff. Good for LeBaron Fylon for landing at Alabama. I think Nate Oates is an awesome coach. He's a great person to learn under. So, yeah, good for LeBaron Fylon.
One other thing I wanted to touch, you know, we'll continue to discuss it because that's what we do as KU basketball fans, is speculate about what the team could look like and the ceiling. And we know that this team's ceiling is already very high going into next season. But the Hawks are at 12 scholarship players right now, and with needing to forfeit one over the next 2 years, you could be done, and that wouldn't, you know, be dreadful by any stretch if you're done and you got your 12 guys and you're riding with these guys the rest of the way. But are we completely ruling out the possibility of Johnny Furphy coming back? I mean, yeah, it'd be a stacked house on the wing, but let's get Johnny back and give him, you know, make sure that he gets the 13th scholarship spot, and then you're really cooking. You know, we're already excited about this roster and where it ranks in terms of not only next season in college basketball, but maybe one of Coach Self's best rosters ever. If you get Johnny Furphy back, and there's still that possibility, and technically there still could be a spot for him, then you just add another talented, long shooting wing. I think everybody would say that. And I also really like what Zeke Mayo said, which is that he expected to compete for minutes when he signed here.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
he's
not
shying away from that. So should be very exciting.
Yeah, no, and I probably jumped the gun ruling Johnny Furphy out. I mean, if I'm Johnny Furphy, you know, I can see why he would go, obviously. I mean, if you're going to turn into a millionaire overnight. And I don't know the NIL situation about what's going on with Johnny Furphy. I think he's able to make some money, but not entirely of like what he probably could be making right now. So, yeah, it is interesting. And if Johnny Furphy would decide to come back, I think it makes some people angry, I think, coming into the transfer portal, just, you know, that there is more of that competition. But, you know, it all depends on like what kind of person you are, I guess. Like if you have that drive to be able to be competitive and to be able to share those minutes and play a team game and try to win a national championship, I think that would be a huge addition for Kansas. I'm not too optimistic about it. I think he's probably gone. I was looking at a mock draft today, and he's still projected somewhere late first round. So, yeah, we'll see. But yeah, that is an interesting point. We were going to get to some Chiefs talk. We will actually get to that tomorrow. Coming up on the other side, we have David Leske from Inside the Crown coming on to talk a little Royals with us. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320. KLWN, depend on it. Welcome back into Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320. KLWN, stay tuned. We have high school softball. Lawrence High is facing off against Perry Lecompton today. They're playing a doubleheader. First pitch is supposed to be at 4 o'clock. But coming up right now, we have David Leske from Inside the Crown. David, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing just fine. So the Royals, kind of a little back and forth. I want to start just kind of with this weekend. The Royals lose the series to the Detroit Tigers. Singer pitched well in the first loss to the Tigers, at least. Wonka kind of struggled yesterday. What's your thoughts just kind of on the series?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty evenly matched. It's like, Royals-Tigers has been for the last, I don't even know how many years. It feels like every game is a one-run game between these two teams. And the series was not, obviously. The Royals won 8-0 on Friday and then lost 4-1. Was it 4-1? Yeah, it's 4-1 yesterday. So, you know, there were a couple bigger gaps, but they were a seventh inning away from winning the series. I wrote this morning, it's the sequencing matters right? If they had won yesterday, we'd feel a lot better than them winning on Friday and then losing Saturday and Sunday. If they had won on Saturday and come back in the seventh and losing and not the other 2 games, but they, you know, whatever. It's just kind of the perception changes a little bit. But I think the big thing for the Royals that I find really interesting, they got off to the good start. They were 9-4 after the 7-game winning streak. And that was great. But since then, the offense has kind of petered out a little bit. It's been not always bad. I mean, they've scored some runs in the, what is it now, 16 games since then. But they're 8-8, which in some ways, you look at that and you go, wait, the Royals are not playing well, and they're 8-8 in their last 16 games. And it's funny because, again, this goes back to sequencing, what expectations do, because they started 9-4 and then go 8-8, and you're like, well, they're not playing well. And they started 8-8 and then went 9-4, you go, wow, they're getting hot at the right time. And so I feel like it's been really impressive that they've been able to kind of weather this storm where the offense has been really up and down. And now the question to me is, can they start hitting again? Because there are some signs that, hey, this offense, it's not very deep. I thought it looked a lot deeper over those first 13 games. And now over the last 2.5, 3 weeks, it's looked a lot shallower.
Right.
That's a little bit concerning.
Yeah, no, definitely. And we're going to stick on the defensive side here because I saw Will Klein got his first, I guess, two big league strikeouts, and he was sent back down today. Should we expect him to kind of have a larger role later on in the year? Like, what's your optimism about Will Klein sort of having a role this year?
Yeah, and Klein was the victim of a numbers game, really. There aren't many pitchers in this bullpen with options who are not deserving of their spot. I mean, Nick Anderson has options, but he's pitched fine. I think you have some concern over 3 strikeouts and what 10 innings or whatever, but he's a veteran, and you give him that shot for a little while. So, yeah, it's too bad. Too bad for Klein that he was the guy to go down. But, yeah, I think that the big thing for Klein is control, which I think is the case for a lot of young relievers. But the stuff is electric. He gets up into the triple digits with his fastball at times. I mean, yesterday he struck – his first strikeout was a 98.1-mile-per-hour fastball, which is the 11th hardest pitch thrown by a Royals pitcher this year. So it's part of it is the Royals don't have a lot of heat in their bullpen, which is a concern, and that's one of the reasons why I hope they could have found a spot for Klein long-term. But, I think that if he can throw strikes reasonably well, he doesn't have to be pinpoint. You know, he's not – James MacArthur doesn't walk guys. He doesn't have to be James MacArthur. He just has to be reasonably solid with his control. I think he can be a late-inning reliever and really, really help solidify that 6th, 7th, 8th inning for the Royals.
Hey, David, Sean Kellerman here. Appreciate you coming on with us. Wanted to ask you, I guess, one good and one bad, because that's kind of how it's been. Like you said, 8-8 the last 16 games. First, let's start with the good. Since we last talked to you, we've seen just some ridiculous individual plays defensively. We had Kyle Isbell and a monsoon on Thursday, Adam Frazier, the double play in the opener against Detroit, and then, Bobby Witt Jr., just absolutely magical in the field. We know when the Royals had their most success in those World Series runs, defense was absolutely huge. I assume that Matt Quatraro and company are continuing to put an emphasis on that, because this seems like another Royals team that if they're going to
Sounds like we might have lost Sean Kellerman there.
Yeah, that's it. There was a boing. That's what I heard.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure what just happened there. I'm not entirely sure. Hey, Sean, are you there? I think we might have lost him. I'm not sure what his Oh, there he is. Hey, Sean.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, sorry, we lost you there for a sec. Not quite sure what happened, but yeah, go ahead and finish your question.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. We're over here at the LHS softball field before we get a doubleheader underway. Yeah, David, just talk about the importance of defense. We've seen so many strong individual defensive plays since we last talked to you, but also the coaching staff and their emphasis on that, since because of the offensive struggles at times, you get the sense that if the Royals are going to be successful, they're going to have to be one of the best defensive teams in the league.
Yeah, I mean, look, you win by being elite at something. I mean, you can you can win 83 games if you're okay at everything or slightly above average at everything, but you can really win by having at least one facet of the game that you're elite in. And defensively right now, the Royals are elite. They have, great defense around the infield. Vinny Pascantino has been surprisingly great defensively at first. I think he's really put a lot of work into that. Obviously, the rest of the guys we know, Massey, Witt, Garcia. Kyle Isbell in center has been great. He's always great. MJ Melendez has been really good in left field. I mean, that's the guy who's turned things around. Salvador Perez has become an elite pitch framer behind the plate. So they've done a lot of things to improve their defense, and it's really important for a couple of reasons. One, like you mentioned, they're not scoring runs. And so a run scored and a run saved are not the same value, obviously, because you still need to score runs to win. But when you look at the Royals' pitching staff, they don't get a ton of strikeouts. I mean, Cole Reagans does, yes. And they've got a couple relievers who do, and they will. When Will Klein comes back, he will also be one of those guys to get strikeouts. But a lot of the guys are they get a lot of contact. And on a different team, that would concern me a lot more than it does on the Royals. And, yeah, I mean, I'm still concerned about the pitch-to-contact that they have. They just don't get enough strikeouts, in my opinion. But when you can catch it as well as the Royals do, it at least alleviates some of those concerns. So it's really big for this club in particular.
Yeah, isn't it funny? Because you think back to the postseason push teams in 14 and 15, and you know you had starting pitchers out there who weren't exactly getting a ton of swing and miss. I mean, you had Edison Volquez and Jeremy Guthrie and guys like that, but you had an elite defense. So I think that's a great point that it's going to need to be one of the biggest positives about this Royals team. Okay, so then we're unfortunately going to flip to the offensive side. It seems to me like it's one of those situations where you're never as good on your best day, never as bad as you look on your worst day. But guys have definitely been laboring. It's kind of a stronger, bigger sample size now. But Velazquez is 0 for his last 16. I think it's 2 for 30, more extended. Yeah. And he had a hot start, so certainly has cooled off big time. Freddie Fermin, not quite there. And Michael Massey, of course, coming back from injury, has been scuffling a little bit recently. What's your takeaway with the offense? And I assume you think that the ceiling's a little higher than it's been recently.
I do. I like you said, they're not as good as they were, and they're not as bad as they are. And this team, the way I look at it, you got 9 guys every day. You need 3 guys who are hot. And they don't have to be red hot, but 3 guys who are hot, 2 or 3 guys who are going fine, and then another guy who's maybe below average. Then you can deal with a couple of slumps. The problem with this team right now, Garcia is back to being hot. So he's hot at the top. Bobby Witt Jr. has been pretty consistent, although he's not hitting for the power that he was earlier this season. But you're fine with him. Pascantino's back into a slump. Salvi has stayed hot pretty much all year. And then you look at the rest of the lineup. Tonight they've got Massey hitting fifth because MJ Melendez is in a huge slump. Well, he wasn't earlier. Nelson Velasquez, like you said, huge slump. Massey is not hitting well yet. And to this point, he hasn't really hit at the big league level. So I don't know if it's yet or just isn't hitting well. And then Hunter Renfro's not hitting well. Kyle Isbell has actually been kind of hot lately, and he's at the bottom of the lineup. They just don't need guys who are red hot. They need guys who aren't ice cold, and they've just got so much ice cold right now that they can't piece together any rallies. It's unfortunate. The one thing they're doing well, I think, and I haven't looked since Saturday, so this might be a little bit different with a couple of the matchups, but it feels like it, and they were doing this before, and it feels like they still were. I feel like having good at bats and not striking out. They're putting the ball in play, and their batted ball metrics are still quality. So at some point, you feel like it's going to turn for this offense, at least somewhere in the middle of that first couple weeks and these last 2 or 3 weeks. But in the interim, boy, it's funny. They scored 13 runs in the first 2 games of the series, but it felt like they just couldn't push a run across. And they found ways, obviously, to score all those runs. But they need to get some guys a little bit more consistent, and they need to make the lows a little bit higher. You're going to have slumps, but 2 for 30 is not okay. Maybe make it 7 for 30. You know, add a few more hits in there, and that's how they're going to bounce back. I don't know when or if it'll happen, but that's what they need.
We're talking to David Leske of Inside the Crown. David, so quick question. Obviously, Kansas City's going at Toronto, and Toronto It's a pretty good matchup for the Chiefs. And then after Toronto, we are going to host the defending champions. Obviously, the Rangers are down comparatively to at least last year. Do you think these two series, what do you think the Royals can do in order to sort of maintain momentum and go forward? Do you think the Royals can sort of gain the momentum back, I guess, is the question coming into these next two series?
Yeah, I mean, they matched up with the Blue Jays well last week, obviously. It was close games. I mean, all four of them were close. The Royals just came out on top in three of them. They all could have gone either way, honestly. And so it should be a competitive series, I would hope. You always think on the road you want to go 500, and at home you want to win two of three. And obviously you can't go 500 in a three-game series. So I think if they get to the Brewers a week from today, I think they're off on Thursday and not Monday. Anyway, if they get to the Brewers next week at 20-15, you know, just continue the 500. I think you feel good about that, and obviously you'd like it to be, if they're going to go 3-3, you want it to be 2-3 at home and 1-3 on the road. But however they can go 3-3, I think that's a good thing. I was on a show in Wichita last week when they had 8 games left between now and the end of the Rangers series, the Blue Jays series, and I said, look, if they're 18-14, you feel good about that. Well, they're 17-12, so if they take 1-3, I think you feel good about that. You have to keep pace, and like I said early, if you can go 500 when you're struggling, you're going to win 90 games. I mean, it's the simple math, because when you're not struggling, you're going to obviously do more than 500. So hopefully they can continue to tread water here and then get hot again and maybe win another 9-13. If they can, you know, repeat that cycle over and over, they'll be fine.
Coming up in the Toronto series, I saw that Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo are going to be starting in the last two games. And the Royals actually brought up Bolin from Omaha. What do you expect out of him in his first game against Toronto?
Yeah, he's been really good in AAA this year. He had his feet wet last year with a couple, one relief outing and one inning start. He was an opener. But yeah, he's been good in AAA. Before he went down with Tommy John, 2022 or 21, I can't, whatever year it was, he went down with Tommy John. To me, he was the Royals' number one pitching prospect. And then it's taken him a little time to get that feel back. But from people I've talked to who saw him in Omaha, they said that he looked like the guy pre-Tommy John, much but a lot closer to it. The velocity's not quite what it was, and that's okay. Ultimately, I think his ceiling is like a number three starter, which, and more likely that means he's a 4 or 5 starter. But that's okay. He has good control. He gets a ton of ground balls, very heavy fastball. His slider is really good. I'm interested to see him. The Blue Jays lineup has not played well. There is a lot of potential in the Blue Jays lineup, and so you feel like it's a ticking time bomb of waiting for them to explode. But hopefully they don't explode until after the Royals leave town, and because the Royals don't see them again this year. So it's fine if they want to get hot after Wednesday. That's great, and I think Bolin has a chance to have a really nice starting debut at the big league level.
My mic was off. Sounds good, David. And really quick, right now. It's time to announce the honorary Bobby Witt Jr. Player of the Week. Who do you think it is, or at least it was this week?
I think it was Michael Garcia, who had a really good week after, I mean, we talked about the lowest of lows. He was as cold as it gets for a long time, but he had a great week. Him, Salvador Perez, Kyle Isbell, those are the three. I mean, I mentioned them earlier. Those are the three who were hot, really. And all three of them had really good weeks, but Michael Garcia drove in 7 runs, stole 3 bases, hit a home run. He looks like he's back on track right now.
Awesome. Well, that is David Leske. David, go ahead and tell the people where they can find your stuff.
InsideTheCrown.substack.com. You can probably just Google Inside the Crown, I would assume, and get there. But yeah, I'm trying. You know, most days I'm out. I'm writing most weekdays. There might be one day off during the week. You know, family, job, all that stuff. But, yeah, trying to get some out there almost every day.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, I know anybody out there listening, I encourage you to go check out David's stuff. It's really good stuff. I was reading some of it this morning. So, yeah, go ahead and check out David Leske on Inside the Crown. David, thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, that was David Leske of Inside the Crown here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Stay tuned. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we will be joining Joe Becker and Seth Kellerman with their coverage of Lawrence High School facing off against Perry Lecompton in a doubleheader in softball. Sean, real quick, do you want to touch any more on the Chiefs draft before we go ahead and kick it over to you guys for some LHS softball?
Yeah, obviously the story of the draft was Xavier Worthy, and it was funny. I don't know if you saw the tweets or whatever it was he said after, which was basically everybody was saying the NFL wasn't going to let the Chiefs get me, but here I am. And that's because people were thinking, oh, well, Worthy's going to have to be taken before the Chiefs have an opportunity. Of course, the Chiefs did trade up four slots to get Worthy at 28, but it's just perfect because he's just a fun little new toy for Andy Reid, who, by the way, recently became the highest paid coach in the NFL, and Travis Kelce, as of today, a two-year, I guess we'll say, restructured contract where he became the highest paid tight end in the NFL. That's probably how it should be, right, when you win back-to-back Super Bowls and continue to dominate in the way the Chiefs have. But, yeah, I like a lot of the picks for the Chiefs, but I think Worthy is the guy, unquestionably, we expect to be a star. And all of a sudden, there's a lot of star power in that Chiefs wide receiver room, and you got your big target with Travis Kelce. It's going to be another year for Chiefs football, and I know we'll touch more on that as the week goes on.
Yeah, no, that's 100% correct. You know, the farther along we get, the more excited I am for Xavier Worthy. I thought, you know, I was always big on Keon Coleman, and he had a very funny press conference with the Buffalo Bills yesterday. But yeah, no, the more that I think about it, the more that I absolutely love the Xavier Worthy pick. And in the second round, the Chiefs drafted Kingsley Suamataya. I got to learn how to say this guy's name because he's awesome. He is an absolute stud. Came out of BYU. And in the fourth round, they picked up tight end Jared Wiley from TCU. And if you've seen any film on this guy, he is absolutely incredible. 6'6", 245 pounds, just a monster of a human. And he's going to be able to learn under the what I think is the greatest tight end to ever play the game of football, Travis Kelce, who, like Sean just said, just signed a massive two-year extension, making him the highest-paid tight end in the NFL. Also in the fourth round, Chiefs got Jalen Hicks, who's a safety out of Washington State. They also, in the fifth round, got Hunter Norzad, an interior offensive lineman. In the sixth round, Kamal Hayden out of Tennessee. He's a cornerback. And in the seventh round, they got C.J. Hansen from Holy Cross, another interior offensive lineman. So the Chiefs really beefing up that offensive line and getting some weapons on offense and also some help in the secondary as well. So that's going to be big for the Chiefs. We will touch more on the Chiefs draft coming up tomorrow, more than likely. But for right now, we will kick it over to a break, and then we will send it over to Joel Becker and Sean Kellerman with their coverage of Lawrence High facing off against Perry Lecompton in a softball doubleheader. First pitch is supposed to be around 4 o'clock, 4:10-ish. And also stay tuned. After that, we will have Hawk Talk with Coach Fitzgerald at 23rd Street Brewery. That'll be at 7 o'clock. And also Hawk Talk with Coach Brandon Schneider is going to be at 8. Just a reminder, if you missed anything from the show, you can be sure to check it out anywhere you get your podcast at the Best of RCST podcast, brought to you by Massage Envy. Anywhere you get podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, SoundCloud. So, yeah, if you missed anything from the show, if you missed David Leskey's interview, or you missed us talking about some KU football players getting drafted, be sure to check that out on the Best of RCST podcast, brought to you by Massage Envy. Like I said, right now, we will get to a commercial, and then coming back, we will join Joel Becker and Sean Kellerman with their coverage of Lawrence High facing off against Perry Lecompton. Thanks again for tuning in. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. Five o'clock hour here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. My name is Daniel Courtright. Stay tuned. I'm only going to be here for about 10 or 15 minutes before joining Joel Becker once again as Lawrence High takes on Perry Lecompton in the second game of their doubleheader, as the Chesty Lions. The Lady Chesty Lions fall 8-5 in the first game. They will be facing off against Perry LeCompton in the second game of that doubleheader coming up here shortly. But since we're kicking it back to me right now, I figured we'd play a little game called Case of the Mondays. Yep, that's right. Case of the Mondays. Case of the Mondays, a little game we like to play where you decide who's having a case of the Mondays, who's not doing so hot right now. And big case of the Mondays for South Carolina baseball. I saw this. Ethan Petry crushed a three-run bomb, but he ended up passing Austin Brindling, rounding first. I guess Austin Brindling was caught up on first base, and Petry went around him. Petry was called out, and the home run only counts for two runs as Petry was called out. It would have been a three-run home run, only counted for two. So big case of the Mondays for Ethan Petry. Actually, no. Big case of the Mondays for the guy on first base. What are you doing? Run. Why would you let the guy who just hit the home run catch up to you? That's insane. Maybe he was like waiting to see if he had a tag or something. I don't know. It is a very strange visual. Actually, I'm watching the video right now. He's like going backwards. So, yeah, really strange stuff there. So poor South Carolina baseball. I think they ended up winning that game though. Case of the Mondays for Nick Saban. Nick Saban has having a case of the Mondays right now because basically he admitted to tampering when he was doing draft coverage for the NFL draft. He was talking about Quinion Mitchell, who was drafted in the first round to the Philadelphia Eagles. And he said Quinion Mitchell was his number one guy. He tried to get him in the transfer portal, but he just wouldn't go in the transfer portal. Nick, that is tampering. You cannot badger someone into trying to go into the transfer portal because you want him. That is tampering. Now, the good news for Nick Saban is that he can't get fired because he just retired. But you cannot, you just can't do that. What do you do? What you're admitting to tampering, trying to get Quinion Mitchell. By the way, good job on Quinion Mitchell for staying at Toledo. He's a kid out of the MAC. I watched a little bit of just some like highlights of him, and he is the perfect corner. He is just absolutely phenomenal. There's like not a flaw in his game. So I don't understand why someone like Nick Saban would want him coming to Alabama. Also, Saban, Toledo guy, I believe. I think he played safety at Toledo. No. Sorry, it was Kent State. It was somewhere up there. But yeah, so Nick Saban having a case of the Mondays, that is 100% sure. Poor Nick Saban. Sorry. Yeah, you cannot be tampering like that. A case of the Mondays for Jerick McKinnon. Moving on from Nick Saban. Jerick McKinnon having a case of the Mondays, and that is because I don't think he's coming back, unfortunately, for all you Jerick McKinnon fans out there. I don't think he's coming back. Here's why. I think Xavier Worthy took number one, so that is unfortunate for Jerick McKinnon. There is going to be some competition there in the running back room, but yeah, Jerick McKinnon looks like he's not coming back. That is very unfortunate because he was such a huge part of all of Kansas City's, at least the last two Super Bowls in Kansas City. In the one against the Eagles, he could have scored a touchdown. He ended up not. He ended up going down early at the one. That was such a huge thing because, you know, like, he was going to be able to tell his grandkids, like, hey, I scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl or whatever. And he didn't because situationally it would not have helped the Chiefs. It would have given the ball back to the Eagles. So, yeah. I feel very sorry for Jerick McKinnon, but at the same time, it is a business. I really love Jerick McKinnon. I loved when he was with the Vikings. Then tore his ACL, bounced around. I think he went to the 49ers before he came to the Chiefs. But, yeah. So, sorry for Jerick McKinnon because it looks like he's not coming back. You know, he could just be changing jersey numbers, but I doubt that. I hope that's the case, though, if he's just changing jersey numbers, but looks like he's not coming back. Another case of the Mondays for the nice people of Galveston, Texas. I don't know if you saw this. Charles Barkley went off on the New York Pelicans. New York Pelicans dropped a game in the playoffs, and Charles Barkley said, "We're not sending them to Cancun. We're sending them to Galveston, Texas, with that dirty water, washing up on the beach. You don't even have a beach. Galveston, Texas. We're not sending you to Cancun. You guys quit. We're sending you to Galveston." And the people of Galveston are probably like, "Hey, man, what the heck? That's insane. Why are we just catching strays right now? That is harsh and rude, Charles. What the heck?" Although I've been to Galveston, it is they have dirty water. He was right. He's telling the truth, to be honest. But they're nice people down there. I don't know, Charles. That was mean of you, to just the strayest of all strays, just hitting Galveston, Texas for some reason. You didn't need to do that. Could have picked like a worse city. It was like weirdly specific to go with Galveston. But very funny stuff. I love watching those guys at the end. I'm not a huge NBA guy, but like I'll watch during the playoffs, and then I like watching their sort of highlights afterwards with Shaq and Kenny and Ernie and Chuck. This is always a good time. Case of the Mondays for Xavier Worthy back on the Chiefs, and here's why. Because he has to downgrade from the Texas facilities to the Kansas City facilities. I don't know if you knew this. The Kansas City Chiefs had their player report cards, and the Chiefs, I believe, got a D rating, or maybe an F. I think it was a D, maybe. They had one of the worst rated facilities in the NFL. And if you've seen it, I mean, you see it, right? And if you've seen the Texas Longhorns facility, which you should, it's phenomenal. It's like walking into a spaceship. They have the coolest stuff. So probably a case of the Mondays, because I think Xavier Worthy's probably young enough to be like, "Hey man, what the heck? Why aren't these facilities that nice?" I don't. Once he gets that first game check, I think that case of the Mondays is going away pretty soon. Because when you're in college, at least this is how it used to be. Obviously, with the NIL kind of being how it is right now, it's interesting. But with college, you have to be able to have very nice things, because you weren't able to pay your players before that, right? So you had to wow them with like cool gear and like awesome lockers and like, "Look, we have a hot tub and a barbershop." And then you get to the NFL and they're like, "Yeah, man, here's your locker, and also here's millions of dollars." So it's not that big of a difference, I don't believe. I'm actually going to pause here 10 seconds for station identification.
KLWN Lawrence. 1320 KLWN Lawrence and FM 1017 K269 GP Lawrence. Depend on it.
All right, I'm back. Had to pause 10 seconds for station identification. But yeah, Xavier Worthy downgraded from the Texas Longhorns facilities to the Kansas City Chiefs facilities, and I bet that goes away after he gets that first paycheck. Also, case of the Mondays for Chris Finch, the Minnesota Timberwolves head coach, tore his patellar tendon when Mike Connolly ran out of bounds and knocked into him on the sidelines. How that sucks so bad. I'm so sorry, Chris Finch. That really is a bad case of the Mondays. Knee injuries are no fun, and I'm like a young, spry person. I can't imagine knee injuries are more fun when you get older. I can't imagine that's any fun. So I feel terrible for Chris Finch right now. Yeah, Mike Connolly was chasing after a ball and ran into his own head coach. I don't know if he'll be back. I haven't seen anything floating around there on the interweb saying that Chris Finch will be back or not. Who knows with Chris Finch? You got to feel for the guy at least a little bit, because getting a knee injury like that, especially in that fashion, and especially when the Timberwolves are playing so good, losing your coach to an injury is probably one of the strangest things that could ever happen. And the Timberwolves are on a heater right now. Anthony Edwards is playing Like there's people, and not me, there's people out there saying, like, they're comparing him to, like, Michael Jordan, like the way that he plays basketball. And I believe that. I don't know. He's got similar facets to his game. Anthony Edwards is incredible, though. If you haven't watched, look, if you're not an NBA guy, if you're not an NBA fan, I encourage you to watch the Minnesota Timberwolves play basketball and watch Anthony Edwards. It's astounding. It is a magical thing to see. And you're going to be thinking to yourself the entire time, how the hell did Georgia have Anthony Edwards and they got last in the SEC and they didn't make the NCAA tournament? They got 13th in the SEC, I believe, actually. How? It doesn't make sense. What is Tom Crean doing? I have no idea. All right, that's it for Case of the Mondays. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Stay tuned. I'm kicking it back over to Joel Becker here in just a moment after a short break. He will give you coverage of Lawrence High taking on Perry LeCompton High School in softball with the second game of a doubleheader. Like I said, you're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, it's Nick Springer from Rock Chalk Sports Talk on KLWN, and despite sitting in a studio all day, my body feels great thanks to Massage Envy. Their total body stretch services can help you stay loose and limber and clear your mind and help your body. Their total body stretch services are completely customizable. All you have to do is sit back, relax, and breathe deep while they help you through the guided stretches. So if you've been dealing with aches and pains, be sure to check out Massage Envy on 6th Street in Lawrence and 119th in Black Bob in Olathe.